السلام عليكم. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، والصلاة والسلام على خير المرسلين وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين. ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. سبحانك اللهم لا علم لنا إلا ما علمتنا إنك أنت العليم الحكيم. So we've now moved on to the fifth pillar. We completed the fourth pillar just before Ramadan, the pillar of Hajj, which was quite timely. I mean, the pillar of fasting, the month of Ramadan, which was quite timely. And we move on to the fifth pillar, which in many ways has a lot of connections with the fourth pillar, in that both involve forbidding something from yourself that is normally allowed. With respect to Ramadan, it's forbidding yourself for a particular period of time. And with respect to Hajj, it's forbidding yourself things when you are in a particular location. So they have some similarities, and they naturally follow on. Hajj is naturally taken to be the last of the pillars because it's something that's only obligatory once in the lifetime. Whereas if you go through the other pillars, well, I suppose you can start with the Shahada, which is also obligatory once in the lifetime, and it comes full circle to the Hajj. The Hajj is quite self-explanatory, a lot of it. He actually goes into quite a lot of detail in giving instructions on how to perform the Hajj in the course of the lines of poetry that he mentions here. So I'm hoping that it will be plain sailing, inshallah. So he starts, Kitab al-Hajj, the Book of Hajj. الحج فرض مرة في العمر. Hajj is an obligation on every Muslim adult who is sane once in their lifetime. Doesn't mean that you only do it once, but once you've done it the first time, that's called the Hajj of Islam, the Hajjat al-Islam, you have met your obligation. But in order for that Hajj to meet your obligation, it has to be obligatory on you. So if you do Hajj when you're a child, or when you're not sane, or in the past when you were a slave, that Hajj would not count as the Hajj of Islam. So if you were then freed, you would be considered to have not done your Hajj yet. And if a person who is close to the age of puberty goes on Hajj, then they enter Ihram before they reach puberty, and then while they're on the Hajj, they reach puberty. That's not counted as their Hajj. They can't renew their ihram once they reach puberty. No, once you've entered ihram, you have to do what you've entered ihram for. So they wouldn't be considered to be doing an obligatory Hajj. So it's obligatory once in a lifetime. For those who have the capacity to do it as well, there's various conditions attached to Hajj. Apart from being Muslim and being above the age of puberty and being sane, there is also the condition that you have the capacity to go on Hajj. And this can refer to your physical capacity, whether you're strong enough to do it. It can refer to your financial capacity, whether you have the means to go on Hajj. Although sometimes there were people in the past who didn't actually seem to have any particular means, but they had a skill, which meant that they could travel to Hajj and make use of that skill along the road in order to get there. But today we have logistical issues to get across. So that's part of the ability to do it, is being able to overcome those logistical issues, visas, passports, and so on and so on. Arkanuhu in turikat lam tujbaru. So there are different elements to the Hajj. There are obligations that cannot be mended, cannot be set right, cannot be repaired. And there are obligations that you can repair by doing a sacrifice later on in the Hajj, in the days of Mina. So there are two types of obligation for the Hajj. He goes into the first ones, which are called the arkan, or the pillars, or the central things that make up Hajj. And he says, these are the ones that if you leave them, you cannot make them right. In other words, without it, there is no Hajj. And the first one is ihram. And he's going to go into more detail about ihram later, entering into the state of ihram. The second one is sa'i, which is going between Safa and Marwa. The third is the wukuf of Arafah, standing on Arafah. There's a famous hadith that Al-Hajju Arafah, the main difference between Umrah and Hajj is Arafah. And this is done on the Laylatul Adha. It has to be done in the night of the Eid. So after the day of Arafah, you have to be there after Maghrib for at least a moment in order to be considered to have stood on Arafah and met the condition of standing on Arafah. And the final one is Watawafu Radifa, the tawaf that is done after the standing on Arafah, which is the Tawaf al-Ifadah, which is a pillar of the Hajj that you cannot have without. Although there was times when the people did all three Tawafs in one Tawaf. They arrived really late, just in time to get to Arafah. Then they went and they did the stoning for 2 days, didn't do the Tawaf after the first day of the stoning of Aqaba, but waited, and then did their Tawaf of greeting the mosque, the Tawaf of Ifadah and the Tawaf of saying goodbye all at the same time, and then went on their way. So there was a shortened Hajj that sometimes some people did that met all the conditions, because that was just doing the things that cannot be repaired, that cannot be repaired, that have to be done. And they obviously had to do the Sa'i after that Tawaf al-Ifadah. Because the other thing about the Sa'i, which is the going between Safa and Marwa, it has to be done after a Tawaf that is an obligatory Tawaf. And there are two obligatory Tawafs on the Hajj, the Tawaf al-Qudum, which as we're going to see is a Tawaf that can be repaired by a sacrifice, the Tawaf when you first enter Mecca, and the Tawaf al-Ifadah, which cannot be repaired, which has to be done. Is that clear? In terms of, by the way, the condition for Hajj, it is not a condition in our madhab that a woman has to have a mahram in order to go on Hajj, or has to go with her husband or some close family member. It was considered okay for a woman to travel with a large group of people, even if she was not related to any of them, so long as she was safe in that group and they could go on Hajj with her. So it was not a condition in our madhab that you could only go on Hajj if you're a woman, if you have a mahram or a husband to go with you. So he talked about the arkan. There were these four things: ihram, the tawaf al-ifadah, the sa'i, which has to be after an obligatory tawaf, and standing on Arafah on the night of the Eid. The wajibat ghayrul arkan. So the obligatory elements of Hajj that are parts of the Hajj and are obligatory for you to do on the Hajj, but they are not considered to be arkan. They're not considered to be central elements without which there couldn't be a Hajj at all. He said, "Wal wajibatu ghayrul arkan bi damin qad jubirat," can be repaired with blood. Whenever they use the word blood, dam, in the books of Hajj, they mean the sacrifices of what is called the hadi, which is a sacrificial animal that people used to bring with them in order to sacrifice on the Hajj. But I think in the modern day, everybody who goes on Hajj as part of their Hajj package has to pay a certain amount towards a sacrificial animal, which is then done on their behalf, which will make up for any mistakes that might be done. Or if they're doing, as we're going to come to in due course, tamattu or qiran, they have to have a sacrifice for doing their Hajj in that particular way. Wajubirat minha. So up among these things is the tawafu man qudim. So he's saying this list that he's coming with is not all of them, but it's the major part of them. So minha, from among them. The first is the tawafu man qudim, the tawaf, or the tawafu man qadim, the tawaf of the one who arrives in Mecca. So when you first get to Mecca, the first thing that you should do upon getting to Mecca is to go straight to the house and do tawaf. That is an obligation on you, and it's called the tawaf qudum. And it is something that if you fail to do it, you have missed out one of the obligations and you have to do a sacrifice. The only people who have an excuse are those who arrive to the Hajj so late that if they were to go to Mecca to do this tawaf, they would miss the standing at Arafah during the night. Say they arrive shortly before Fajr on the night of the Eid, they go to Mecca and do that tawaf without going straight to Arafah, they will miss the Hajj completely. So they have an excuse that they go straight, and there's a difference of opinion whether they have to do a sacrifice or not when they are in that situation. But if somebody has the opportunity and they fail to do the tawaf al-qudum, they have to do a sacrifice. Wa wasluhu bisa'i. The second is connecting your sa'i to the tawaf al-qudum, doing it straight after the tawaf al-Qudum, because the Tawaf al-Qudum is an obligatory one. So the moment you finish your first Tawaf al-Qudum, you've done your two raka'ats, then you should go straight away to do the Sa'i. if you don't do the sa'i and you introduce a big gap there between doing your tawaf, maybe you do your tawaf, then you go off and have a rest and then come back and do your sa'i, you have to do a sacrifice because you haven't connected it to it. Mashyun bihima. It's also important to walk if you have the capacity to walk when you're doing tawaf and when you're doing sa'i. There's a difference of opinion more about the sa'i. Some saying it's not so bad to be mounted on the sa'i. But the stronger position is that you should be walking if you have the capacity to walk throughout your tawaf and throughout your sa'i. You shouldn't be carried by somebody else. You shouldn't be on a horseback. Unless, of course, you're a child who could easily get lost. Children are carried. Sometimes people who are very sick can be carried by others, or they can be in a wheelchair or riding or pulled in a cart. But when they have an excuse, it's okay. But if you have no excuse and you don't walk, you have to do a sacrifice. Wa rak'at at-tawaf in tahaddama. And doing the two rak'ats that seal a tawaf after you have finished your seven circuits. There are two rak'ats that are done at the maqam of Ibrahim. In tahaddama, if it is an obligatory tawaf. So if you do an obligatory tawaf and you don't do those two rak'ats at the end of it straight away, then you have to do a sacrifice. If you go away and you lose wudu without having done them, then you have to come back and do the whole tawaf again. If you're still in wudu, then you can go back and do those two rak'ats, or do the two rak'ats wherever you are, and you make it right with the sacrifice. Nuzulu Muzdalifa. Stopping off at Muzdalifa, and preferably spending the night at Muzdalifa, and standing at the sacred landmark, the Mash'ar al-Haram. That is also one of the obligations of Hajj, and this is on the way back from Arafah to Mina. And if you simply pass through without stopping, or you don't get there during the night, then you have to do a sacrifice to make that right. And then you leave, obviously, after having prayed Fajr, so you spend the night there. So it says, Nuzulu Muzdalifa fi ruju'ina, on our return from Arafat. Mabitu laylatin thalathin bi Mina, spending the three nights at Mina, and that's the three nights after coming from Arafat. Those, not the nights before Arafat. There is no obligation on you to spend those nights at Mina, even though it's recommended to spend some of them at Mina. But after, when you are stoning the Jamarat, you have to spend the major part of every one of those three nights in Mina. Every one of those three nights, which is starting the night after the Eid and the two nights after that. And there could be a fourth night if you're going to stone for another day after that. You spend them all at Mina, or the major part of them. If you spend less than half of those nights, if you spend more than half of those nights outside of Mina doing other things, even if you sleep half of the night there, you have to do a sacrifice because you haven't spent the majority of your nights at Mina. Is that clear? So also when it comes to ihram, there are places that you should enter ihram. If you go past those places without being in ihram and you have the intention of going on Hajj or Umrah, then you have to do a sacrifice. Or you can avoid the sacrifice if you've only gone a little bit past and you go back to the miqat and enter ihram there. But if you enter ihram past the miqat, you have to do a sacrifice to make it right. This is for people who are coming from far off lands or from outside the zone where the miqats are. If you live within the miqat, then your miqat is your house. If you live within that area. And if you live in Mecca, your miqat is in Mecca. You don't have to go out to any part outside of the Haram. Your miqat is within Mecca. So there are different ones for different peoples. For Tiba, which is another name for Medina. The miqat is called Dhul Hulayfa, and it's about 6 or 7 miles outside of Medina on the road to Mecca. So if you're coming from Medina if you're a person, an inhabitant of Medina, somebody who calls Medina home, or you happen to be in Medina before you go on Hajj, or you're traveling from that direction, you enter into your ihram at Dhul-Hulayfa. لِشَّامِ وَمِصْرِ الْجُحْبَ. For people who come from Sham, which is modern-day Syria and Lebanon and those areas, and people who come from Misr, which is Egypt, and by extension, people who come from anywhere in that direction, which is Europe, the North Africa, I suppose you could even say America, depending upon the route that people take. Anybody who comes from that direction, their miqat is Juhba. That's the place where they have to enter ihram. Obviously, in the modern time, we come in different routes. We don't actually stop off at the miqat anymore. People just fly over them. So the ruling there is that as soon as you are in a direct line with where the miqat is, that you enter your ihram. You can't enter your ihram actually in the place because the airplane doesn't stop in Juhba to allow you to enter into ihram. You simply fly over it and then you fly into Jeddah. Qarnun li Najdin, the people of Najd enter ihram at Qarn, which is the closest of all of the miqat to Mecca, and anybody who's coming from that same direction. Irqu, ذَاتُ عِرْقٍ لِلْعِرَاقِ, the people of Iraq and anybody coming from that direction, such as from India and Pakistan and all of those countries, is ذَاتُ عِرْقٍ, is a place called ذَاتْ عِرْقٍ. And then for the people coming from the south, from Yemen, it's يَلَمْلَمُ الْيَمَنْ. And it says here, it's not just for the people from those places, أَتِيهَا, the people who come from that direction, وَفَاقْ, and beyond there. So anywhere in the same direction, you come through. And if you are a person of Iraq and you happen to be visiting friends in Syria, and then you want to come on Hajj, obviously you do it from the place of the people of Syria, because you do it for the path that you are taking when you come to Hajj. Doesn't mean that because you are English, you have to enter your ihram from Juhba. It depends where you're coming from. It could be English and you're coming from South Africa to Hajj. تَجَرُّدٍ مِّنَ الْمَخِيطِ, stripping away all makhit, all sewn garments for men. This doesn't mean that it can't have any sewn things on it, but it means that they can't be attached together by being sewn on, or even buttoned, or things like that. Because the actual prohibition is what's called makhit wa muhit. It what goes around your body and is stitched. So for example, with sandals, it's impossible to find sandals without some sort of stitching in them, but you've got to make sure that they don't go around behind your heel, so they don't go all the way around. And another thing this means that you're not allowed to have rings or watches or amulets around your neck or anything, or a hat that goes around your head, anything that goes around in that particular way, or a belt that's tied on, that goes all the way around, you have to avoid. But of course, there is an exception allowed for a particular Hajj belt, so long as it's put under the ihram in our case, in order to keep your money safe and things like that. And you know that we're going to come to the actual clothes, but you don't sort of attach them except by rolling them. So you keep your izar by rolling it up rather than sort of tying it together with something or stitching it on. So that's the prohibition. But women, they have no prohibition in that respect. They can wear as much stitched garment as they like. Talbiyah. So the next obligation, by the way, so this means if you wear a garment like that, you have to do a sacrifice. Okay, because it's one of these obligations. Talbiyah. So saying, labbaik Allahumma labbaik, labbaik la sharika laka labbaik, innal hamda wa ni'mata laka wal mulk. La sharika lak, those particular words of the talbiyah, they are another one of the obligations. You have to do them at least once in the course of your Hajj. But there's difference of opinion in saying that if you don't do them at particular points in your Hajj, like when you first enter Hajj, when you first enter Mecca, that you stop doing them, that you don't do it in each time you change state, that you have to do the sacrifice. Some people say that it's absolute, you have to do it when you have to do it. But the strongest position is if you do it occasionally, but not as much as you should, you've met the obligation in terms of not having to do a sacrifice. But you have to do talbiyah as part of your Hajj. It's part of going into ihram is saying talbiyah. Al-halq, shaving the head, cutting your hair, and all of the other things associated, like cutting your nails, trimming your beard hairs, and all those types of things that a person might want to do on Hajj because he's been in ihram for a time and he feels really dirty and feels like there is lice there and all those sorts of things. You're not allowed to do any of that. You're not allowed to cut or shave your head until after you have completed your Hajj, till you've done your stoning of Aqaba and you're on your way to Ifadah. You're not allowed to do it before then. In the case of Umrah, once you finish your sa'i, then you can cut your hair again and shave your head and stuff like that. But if you do it outside of those times, while you're in ihram, you have to make it right with a sacrifice. Finally, the last one he mentions is ma'aramyil jimar, tawfiyah. So this list is complete with the stoning of the jamarat. There's three jamras. There's the one that you do on the first day, on the day of Eid, the jamrah til aqaba. And then there's the lesser jamrah, the middle jamrah. And those two you do along with the jamrah al aqaba on each of the next 2 days or the 3 days, if you're staying for 3 days. Each one must be stoned seven times. You have to have seven stones for each time you stone a jamrah. And then you stone each one, saying the takbir each time. You stone, stone, stone. And then afterwards you stand and do your dua for the lesser and the middle ones. But you have to throw seven stones at everyone. If you miss out a single stone and you don't get it right that same day before sunset, you have to do a sacrifice to make it right. وَإِنْ تُرِدْ تَرْتِيبَ حَجِّكَ اسْمَعَا بَيَانَهُ وَالذَّهْنَ وَالذِّهْنَ مِنْكَ اسْتَجْمِعَا. If you want to know the order in which you do the things on your Hajj, then listen up. That's what he says here. I will make it clear to you and concentrate on what I say to you. Gather together your dhihn for this purpose of listening to what I say. Listen to these words. And if you follow what I've said and you're concentrating properly, you will know how to do Hajj and the order in which you're meant to do things. That's what he tells us here. And he's actually delivering these instructions to the people who are coming from the Maghrib, because he was from the Maghrib himself, from Morocco. And so he was asked to give a poem to help people who were going on Hajj so that they knew what to do. And this is what he came up with. And then it was expanded into the Murshid al-Mu'in, when he added all the other bits. But originally it was a text trying to show people how you go on Hajj. So he was giving instructions to people who are coming from the Maghrib to the Hajj. So he's talking about Rabigh here, which is a particular place, which is connected to Juhfa, which is just before Juhfa, if you're coming from the direction of the Maghrib or the direction of Syria. So he says, in Jitta, once you come to Rabighan, to Rabigh, the first thing you do when you get there, which is the edges of Juhfa. So you're entering into your ihram now. So nadhaf, you clean yourself properly. You do all of the things you won't be allowed to do on Hajj. You clip your nails, you shave your pubic hair, you pluck out your underarm hair, you trim your mustache and your beard, all those various things. Maybe even you sort out your hair properly, you brush it properly and all of these types of things. You put, you know, shampoo in your hair and you clean it properly. All of those types of things you do now, because you're not going to be allowed to do them again while you're in ihram. So you clean yourself properly. You scrub all of the dirt off. Then you do a ghusl in the same way you do a wajib ghusl. And this is the sunnah ghusl for entering into an ihram. It's a sunnah. There are actually three different ghusls that you do while you're in Hajj. The only one that you do with proper scrubbing, not worrying about how much dirt you're taking off. The next one is when you enter into Mecca, and the final one is when you are on Arafat. So there's the three different ghusls. That this one is sunnah, the other two are recommended. So you do your ghusl after having cleaned yourself, you wash yourself thoroughly, and you do this bishuru'i yafasil. You do this, not, you know, you arrive and then you do this and then you go about your businesses and do other things. No, the moment you are making the intention to continue on your journey, to the Hajj and you're doing your ihram, you do it then. So if in our situations, obviously, we don't stop at Juhfa. We come on the airplane. So probably the best situation for all of us is just before we leave our house to go to the airplane, if we're not going to have a chance to stop anywhere, if it's going to be like a direct flight, just before we leave the house, we do this ghusl and this cleansing at home just before we leave. And put on the clothes just before we leave then, if there's no opportunity on the plane or anywhere else to do this. Even though we're not anywhere near the miqat yet, it's the only opportunity. And in fact, in Medina, some of the companions used to do it before they even reached Dhul Hulayfa. They asked whether they could do it in Medina first. And they were said, yes, if you do it, Imam Malik said, yes, if you do it straight before you leave, but not if you do it, go about some other business and then continue on. So us, we would do this all at home before we left on the way to Hajj. So that's the cleaning part. The second part of the outward aspect of ihram is walbas riban wa uzratan na'layni, putting on your clothes of ihram. The clothes of ihram are very simple. Obviously, you've removed your other clothes by now, you've washed, and now you don your clothes of ihram. Basically, two cloths. One which is called an izar or an uzra here, which is a cloth that you wrap around your bottom half. So you wrap it a couple of times around and then you sort of roll it in so it stays in place. You roll it from the top. And then the other one is the rida, which you put over your shoulders, the other cloth, and maybe you throw it round, but you put it over both shoulders with our particular position. So it's not tied anywhere, it's just sort of wrapped around over your shoulders. Then you also have your na'layni, which is the sandals that you're permitted to wear on Hajj. And as I said, they shouldn't connect around behind your heel. They can go over your toes, but they shouldn't connect over behind your heel as well, so it doesn't go all the way around. وَاسْتَصْحِبْ الْهَدْيَ وَرَكْعَتَيْنِ. The next part is something, again, that we don't do today, but this was what people used to do in the past. When you were going on Hajj, most people would take with them a sacrificial animal. So they would come to Rabigh. They're bringing with them some camels or some cows or some sheep or some goats or whatever it is. When they come to Rabigh, they make the intention to enter Ihram. They make the intention that this animal that they brought with them will then be sacrificed. It's called a hadi. When they do that, there are certain things that people did. The first was called taqleed, which you get a garland made of plants or flowers, like a wreath, and then often they would sort of hang some sandals from this, and then they would put that around the neck of either the cow or the camel. This wasn't done with sheep or goats. You simply had to say, this sheep is going to be a sacrificial animal. You didn't do anything else. But with camels especially, and with cows to a lesser extent, you put some markers on them so people would know that you have now made the intention that this animal is being consecrated for sacrifice or being put across for sacrifice. So the first thing they would do is that, the garland. Then the next thing they would do in the case of a camel was they would make a very tiny incision, like a fingertip's width in the side of its hump, where a trickle of blood would come out, which would then also, that sort of, would also be another sign that it was marked for sacrifice. And finally, they would put a cloth over the top of the back of the animal with a hole cut out of it for the hump. So it would be like you were giving clothing to the camel. So you have a garland, it would be clothed, and there would be a little bit of blood on the side of its hump. That would be with respect to camels. With respect to cows, they would simply have the garland. With respect to sheep, you just say, this sheep is now earmarked for sacrifice. So this is what he means here. You've made your animal into a sacrificial animal. Wa rak'ataini, and then you pray two rak'ats for entering into ihram. Bil kafirina, the first one you do with bil kafirun, Surah Al-Kafirun, this in the first rak'at. Thumma al-ikhlas, then qul huwa Allahu ahad in the second rak'at. Huma, so in them both. So one of the important things with ihram as well is that you start off your ihram with two rak'ats, if you can. Obviously, sometimes you arrive at the miqat And this is, again, these two rakats, by the way, praying on an airplane is an issue for us. So if you're doing this travel, I would suggest that these two rakats you could do at the airport, or if you have got a stopover, do it in the stopover, these two rakats of ihram. But you can only do the two rakats in the time when prayer is permissible for nawafil prayers. So not between Asr and Maghrib, and not after Fajr until sunrise. If you arrive at the miqat during those times, you should wait until it becomes permissible again for you to pray nafila rakats. If you are with a group of people and you fear you're going to be left behind, then you just have to leave without doing the two rakats. It's not a huge deal, but it's something that if you have any time and opportunity, that should be the way that you start your ihram. You do those two rakats, then following them, you do a dua that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala give you the strength and the capacity to be able to fulfill the rites of Hajj. Then you do the next bit that he talks about here. He says, you go fa'in rakibta, when you get on the back of your, say you're there mounted on the back of a camel. As soon as you sit on the back of your camel and you're settled, then you make your intention of ihram. Once you are settled nicely on the back of your camel. Aw mashayta, or if you're walking, the moment you set out, you take a step in the direction of the Hajj with the intention that you are walking there now, that's when you make your intention of ihram. So he says, فَإِنْ رَكِبْتَ أَوْ مَشِيْتَ أَحْرِمَا. When you get on, it could be you're in a vehicle, a bus. When you go and sit down on the seat of your bus, then you make your intention of ihram. You enter into ihram. You enter into ihram by an intention, and it says here, بِنِيَّةٍ تَصْحَبُ قَوْلًا أَوْ عَمَلٍ, with the intention that is accompanied by words or by actions. So what is the action? He says, كَمَشِي, like walking. That is an action. That accompanies your intention to ihram, the step that you've taken towards the Kaaba. أَوْ تَلْبِيَة, or the words could be like saying the talbiyah. That is your intention. The words accompanied by the intention. You could also say words like you could enunciate exactly what you are intending, because there's three types of Hajj that you can intend. I mean, so you have to be specific. You say like, I make the intention to do Hajj Ifrad, that I am doing Hajj only and not doing any Umrah with it. So you make the intention that I'm doing Hajj Ifrad. Or you can make the intention to do what's called Hajj Qiran, which is when you make this intention, you should intend the Umrah first and then the Hajj, but you are combining them. So when you do your tawaf, when you come into Mecca, that counts for both your Umrah and your Hajj. When you do your sa'i, it counts for both your Umrah and your Hajj. That's called Hajj Qiran. And then there's another one, which when you leave the miqat, you make the intention of tamattu, which basically means here that you're making the intention to do Umrah only. And then once you leave Umrah, after having completed your Umrah, you make a second intention then, enter into Ihram a second time in order to do Hajj. So those are the three options. You have to be clear of your intention when you leave. So sometimes it's good to voice your intention if there's a little bit of a lack of clarity. And that can also be the words that accompany your intention. Mimma tasal, they are connected with the niyyah. You do them at the same time as the niyyah. وَجَدِّدَنْهَا, and with respect to this talbiyah, you repeat it, you renew it, كُلَّمَا تَجَدَّدَتْ حَال, every time your circumstance, your state changes. So every time you start and stop, every time you sit down or stand up, every time you finish a prayer, he says here, ثُمَّ وَإِنْ صَلَّيْتَ, even if you pray, that's a change of state. So we'll finish there, inshallah. If there's any questions, because the next bit is now going on to arriving in Mecca. So are there any questions before we finish?
Yes, Shaykh, assalamu alaikum.
I just turn on my
phone. Okay, so I've got a question about the making a sacrifice due to the missing of the wajibat of Hajj. what would happen that if a person completely is unaware or is not prepared for Hajj and misses multiple wajibats subsequently, like Tawaf al-Qudum, connecting the Sa'i to Tawaf and walking, doing Tawaf, he misses all of them, a couple of them. One sacrifice would be required to make them up, or three or four for each of the missed wajibats of the Hajj?
Each wajibat has its own sacrifice. Even if you do the same thing on multiple occasions, you have to do multiple sacrifices for that same act. For example, if you put on clothes multiple times, all in separate places, you have to do multiple sacrifices for all of those things. So yeah, I don't know how it is in the other madhabs, but in our madhab there could be multiple sacrifices.
Okay.
And obviously you wouldn't have brought these all with you, so sometimes you'll have to buy them on the way. And obviously sometimes you don't have financial means to do it, in which case you go from there to feeding and or fasting.
Okay, yeah, that was my second question. What if it happens that I do not have the physical financial means to do the sacrifice? Okay.
Yeah.
Jazakallah khair.
So yeah, obviously, you know, not everybody has the capacity to be able to, what they say, find a sacrifice, which means afford it really, or even to actually find one existing. But actually now all of the Hajj packets that people go on, the whole Hajj packages, nearly everyone includes some sacrifice. So there's a little bit of leeway as far as I understand it. But obviously, if you're going to go and do Qiran or Tamattu, that sacrifice gets used up for that. So be very careful. Okay, are there any other questions before we finish? وبسر وبركاته بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد عبدك ورسولك النبي الأمي وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم تسليما سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون وسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين See you next time إن شاء الله السلام عليكم
جزاك الله السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته